yeah, there is no place. So you're starting that race not being really warmed up. So that's another thing is if you go out, your body's just expending too much. It hasn't adapted to be ready. So you're really stressing it. So it is so important to New York to go out slow. And you know, that's all we're going to say that ad nauseum over the next 2 weeks. And I'm going to say it at the tent, and I'm going to say it to the group I bring up. But I will tell you, as much as I knew it too, I went out. My very first marathon was New York, and I literally was on all fours when I hit Central Park.
And a hearty welcome to the Running Anthropologist Podcast, episode number 59, still going strong and keeping on running. We got today with us Coach Glenn Wiener, who you just heard from, who's an awesome example of someone who's just sticking with it in the city of New York and coaching thousands of runners, literally thousands of runners, to do their first marathon. He is a great spokesperson for the New York Marathon in general, but especially for Team for Kids, who raise money and raise awareness for the need to get kids moving, get kids into youth sports, especially running, and get the equipment, the race entries, the shoes, anything that they need to communities across the country. They are especially exceptional in getting information to coaches and to would-be coaches, and then to helping people get into their first marathons and train through the year to run that first marathon. Now, Coach Glenn is, as you'll see, he's got a wonderful spirit, and he also has a ton of knowledge about running in general. Since 2008, he's been with Team for Kids, and he knows all about the Staten Island Ferry, you know, getting tens of thousands of runners across to a little island. But he also knows about what it takes to get people motivated. And he himself has run over 25 marathons, including Boston 5 times, New York many times, Chicago, Philadelphia. He was a college runner who came back to running like 25 years after his collegiate career. So he also knows what it's like to start running kind of as an older person, like a lot of us do find distance running. And he's a USA track and field coach. He's coached with the likes of Greet Waits, Jeff Galloway, Greg McMillan, Greta Waits, sorry. And he just has a lot of knowledge that packs into this short episode. And I hope that you too will garner that enthusiasm and catch a little bit of that spirit for the New York Marathon this coming weekend. Hope you share it with others, and hope it gives you something to work towards in the future. I know for me, training with Team for Kids has been a big part of my my year, and just kind of something I could do virtually and something to look forward to. So I'm grateful for that, and I'm also grateful for Coach Glenn sharing with us today. A quick reminder that you can link up with Running Anthropologist at runninganthropologist.com, and you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Running Anthropologist. Send us a message. We'd love to hear from you, especially if it has to do with running culture, what inspires you, and what keeps you moving. Without further ado, let's get started. And welcome to the Running Anthropologist, Glenn Wiener. Thank you so much for being with us. By way of brief introduction, I'd love to share that I know you've been with Team for Kids for over a decade, since 2008, and you've ran with and coached with people like Jeff Galloway, Greg McMillan, been very active throughout USA track and field, endurance coaching throughout the last few decades, and I'm so grateful for your service. You're a wonderful runner and a great coach, and I look forward to hearing all of your wisdom in coaching with Team for Kids.
Thank you, Mark, and thanks for having me on your podcast.
Sure. So I know you've recently turned 50. You're running the low 3-hour marathon still. You've kept a lot of that long distance running magic alive for a lot of people. What started your running, your love affair with running, and what are your running roots?
So let me just correct you on one thing. I just turned 61,
Oh,
but you are correct. Actually, I haven't raced in I think about 4 years, but I did reach the low 3 hours, sub 130, half in my 50s, and hopefully we'll have some time to discuss some of that. But you asked me, how I came to running. So when I was a young individual playing in team sports, it always seemed like, whether it was football or baseball or soccer, that I was like the fastest one. And I wasn't necessarily the most skilled one. So eventually I said, let me think about this. Why don't I put 100% of the resources to something that I seem to be better at? And that's when I basically, around junior high school, I switched over and went out for the junior high school track team. And I decided to focus on what I did best, which was running. And then since that time, I went obviously onto the high school team and then Division III. Then after college, I didn't stay in competitive running. I think I did what a lot of people do, which is, you go out for a run here and there, and you don't necessarily focus on anything specific, no training programs, etc. And then in my 40s, I got back to training again. And it's an interesting story how that came about, and maybe we will get into that.
Sure,
So that's
sure.
basically how I came into running. And maybe I'll say how I came in, because this
Yeah.
might apply to a lot of your listeners. So, I was running periodically up to then, as I mentioned, and I decided to do a hiking trip, which was hike the Inca Trail with a group. And I started to get really nervous that I'm going to be the one holding the group back. So I decided at that point, I better start running more and get in better shape. And I started devoting myself to running again. So after the trip, I said, wow, you're in pretty good shape now. And then I went back to running, to racing.
Oh, that's neat. I love hearing running stories and how people came back to into running too, especially distance running, as you got older. I similar to you, I also find my way back to running, and it's such a big part of my life now, that I was able to find Team for Kids. And I wanted to ask you now about that experience. What is Team for Kids like? What is the coaching like? And what is it all about?
I think the first thing that's important to note is everyone hears Team 4 Kids. And I'm sure you get the same thing, Mark. When people hear that, they think you're part of a team with infants and children and obviously not adults. It doesn't sound like. But as one of the founders of Team 4 Kids said when they were creating the name, was they thought that using the term four would solve that problem, but it hasn't. So Team for Kids is a group of adult runners who are worldwide who have committed to raising a certain amount of funds, and it depends on the race you're in, to raise money for the New York Roadrunners. It used to be the foundation, and then it merged into Roadrunners, so it's Roadrunner, New York Roadrunners itself, for the New York Roadrunners programs, which serviced youth programs. And currently, they serve about 240,000 youth nationwide. And their mission is to make sure that the youth of today is physically active. I'm sure, no matter where anyone is listening from, that they're aware that schools are pressed with budgets. And when they're sitting there deciding, well, we only have X amount of money in the pot, And we have to decide, are we going to give that to, you know, math, science, reading, or track and field? The track and phys ed programs, or, you know, any of the active programs, and I've heard the same with music, sports and music seem to be the first ones cut. So where, when we were younger, we had gym, we had teams. I even remember there was something called, I don't know if it exists, the President's Physical Fitness Awards. And,
sure.
And it was really important for kids to be active. And today, the schools don't have the resources to focus on it. So what New York Roadrunners did was say, guess what? We understand there's a problem. We will put together the program in your school, and it will cost you nothing. And that's what they did. And they started, obviously, with one or two schools, and they've built the programs up to now where they service pre-K through 12th grade nationwide, and now bringing it back, all through the money raised by the members of Team for Kids who are training for one of the endurance events in which they have entries to.
That is incredible. I feel so connected to that cause now. I've also noticed as a teacher and as a former school counselor and coach, I've noticed as well that the kids just don't have, even if there's a limited cross country season or a limited track season, there's not that throughout the year opportunity to get out and run, and there's not the resources to support the coaches and teachers. Which is what, you know, Rising New York Roadrunners and Team for Kids is so good at doing, providing those resources, those workouts, even shoes and free races and all that stuff that would get in the way, basically, of being able to run year round. Have you heard stories of the, you know, from some of the teachers, from some of the kids that are impacted by this program?
Oh, absolutely. And before I get to that, it's not just the average person. I mean, because over the year, it's been about $74 million that has been raised for these programs. They've been able to expand it. So now there's a wheelchair program. So where you have these young individuals who are confined to wheelchairs, Roadrunners comes in and helps them learn to be active, that they can still do competitive sports. You mentioned Rising New York Roadrunners. They also sponsor a summer camp for females. So there's just so much where they've been able to expand it. And in answer to your question, yes. So what New York Roadrunners does is they have what's called ambassadors. And those are some of the select individuals who are in the programs who go around, they talk to us, and they talk to different groups, talking about the impact that it has had on them. And I think one of the main themes that I've heard over the years from these individuals is that it taught them a sense of self-esteem, a sense of commitment, and just some of the skills that they never knew. They never knew about about eating healthier, about being active. So it doesn't matter if the person who wants to join one of the programs is overweight, and then they come in and they learn about better nutrition, they learn about being active, they start to gain that better self-esteem, they start to learn to commit to something. And as I said, that is the theme that we hear over and over and over again from these youths, about, you know, how it's changed their lives.
Yeah, that thing that you said about making a commitment and seeing progress, I think is so powerful, because it translates into anything in life, from academics to, you know, relationships. And that's something about distance running that I've always thought was magical too, is that ability for young people to see, you know, if I invest this time, look at what happens after 3 months or 6 months. You know, I can run a 5K and I can enjoy life more, you know, with my friends, and feel happy about myself. Not to say that running is the only way to do that, but it's a pretty incredible way, and I think Team for Kids supports that, you know, that mentality. So I'm grateful for that work.
I think you mentioned something that's great, and I hope your listeners pick that up. But it's not only, you said endurance teaching, and we were talking about children, but those who are thinking about, you know, training for endurance events, you hit one of the nails on the head of what it does is it teaches us about commitment as adults. It teaches us about when the going gets tough, how to handle it. So whether you're at, you know, mile 20 in a marathon when the going gets tough, or you're struggling at work or in a relationship or trying to do a task at home, some of the skills you learn training for the for an endurance event are definitely transferable. So I love that you just mentioned that. I think that's a great point.
So I would like to dig into that a little bit more, because you've been a Team for Kids coach now for some time. I'd love to hear about what kind of, you know, workouts or what kind of a routine you coach to get people ready that, you know, they want to support this program, but maybe they're not, they wouldn't call themselves marathoners at the start of your coaching. How do you get them ready, and what are some of your favorite routines or favorite workouts that you do with them?
Well, since we are dealing with a lot of individuals who have not been active, who this was on their bucket list of things to do, is to run the New York City Marathon. And again, that is where Team for Kids has the most amount of entries. Traditionally, we've had over the years, obviously this year it's a smaller field, but in the recent years, we have over 2,000 people, because we can get, obviously, entries to the New York City Marathon. But we do have people in other events, such as Boston, Chicago, Tokyo. So there's quite a few events. But these runners, I'd say the majority of them, are not people who are experienced in running. They're not someone like you who came back to running. Do we get those people? Absolutely. Do we get people who are very experienced, who are currently in great shape? Absolutely. But the majority of the people who we get are, I would say, non-runners to begin with. And we take those people from the couch and get them to the finish line in Central Park. And the question that you ask is, how do we do that?
Yeah, no small feat.
It's no small feat, but, and this is, I think, important for people to understand with their first marathon. Our goal as coaches for someone like that, and we tell it to the runners, is not to focus on time. The goal for your first marathon should be to just get to that finish line. So our goal as coaches is to make sure they stay healthy, they get to the starting line, and then they get to the finish line with a smile on their face. And if we've done that as coaches, we've succeeded. So you say, how do we do that? It's a gradual buildup. Mixed with some speed work, once they've had some base. But where, being that these programs start about 5 months before, we are somewhat limited in our ability to do more, but we definitely do more than enough to get people to the finish line.
Okay, so kind of that slow, gradual buildup of mileage, group runs, having fun together, and then mixing in some speed work. What would be, say, a month before the marathon? What would be a weekend workout that you might do, which is just last week or so?
Correct. So what I could tell you here in New York, so we're worldwide, And then we get the people who are local who, when they join as a local participant, I mean, anyone can join, but obviously someone like you who's not in New York, you can't come to practices. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, we've had practices three times a week, and that was Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. After COVID, we've kind of modified that with now Monday being virtual strength work or flexibility online. Mm-hmm. Wednesday's still our quality speed work type day, and Saturdays are our long runs. That's not to say there aren't workouts the other days, but those are when we get together. Mm-hmm. What's also interesting about Team for Kids, and this has changed over the years, is that we here in New York, and you've seen it in the plans that are emailed out, do not train by miles for the long runs. And there's multiple reasons for that. One is, I could tell you, you know, when we used to do that, we had some of the slower runners and beginner runners who, in order to reach 18, 19, 20 miles, would have to be out there 4.5 hours or so in training. And that's just not smart. Mm-hmm. That's just too much stress on the body. Then if we told those people, well, you only do 16 or you only do 14, they feel like second-class citizens, and they're not. You know, there's no reason for them to be out longer. And I've always said, you know, when I've done a 20, 21 miler in training, you know, if it takes me just the training run 3.5 hours, I can't envision being out there for 4.5 hours. And these people are. So I say always, I respect you immensely. But we realized we were seeing too many people get injured being out there. You don't get any physiological gains. Jack Daniels has it after 2.5 hours. Hmm. Some say, you know, 3 hours. Regardless, let's bring it up to even 3 point something. I think everyone would agree there is that certain point where there is no physiological adaptations and you run too much of a risk of injury. Hmm. So what we have done the past few weeks leading up to now was keeping up the speed work, longer tempo runs, usually on the Wednesday, and our 3 hour runs, a 2.5, a 3 hour run. And just this past week, which we are now 2 weeks out, was a 2 hour run. Mm-hmm.
So starting to bring that down a little bit. I really like that philosophy of recognizing, hey, it's the hours that you put in. At a certain point, you know, physiologically, you're not doing any better for your training. So you're just going to show up on marathon day and trust that the training and the work you put in the last 5 months will get you to that finish line.
Absolutely. And I always tell people, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I will guarantee you, you follow, you will get to the finish line. There's no doubt. And where it becomes doubtful is when people do more than they should, mm-hmm. or they say, you know, I wasn't able to follow the plan because of, you know, life issues or life obligations, which we all have. But you can't be a weekend warrior and train for a marathon and just do long runs because your body needs more training than that. And it starts to break down if you just do the long runs or you just do 2 runs. So that's why, you know, we've seen that. We create a plan that has the gradual buildup, has enough in it that it really limits injuries. I don't think any plan can eliminate totally injuries, but I know that we have a better track record than a lot of organizations and groups because of what we've learned over the years and how we structure our program.
Sure. No, and I've heard similarly, it's a great program for those that really are committed to, you know, a good cause and a Team for Kids and also want to be in the New York Marathon. And I can't speak more highly of everyone's support and the work that they've done in communicating with me this year. And I know that's the case for a lot of people. Do you have any, so let's say that we're not, running for a particular team and we don't have that support, but maybe we have a weekend running group that we're a part of. What would be your big three advice for those listening who are considering running a marathon this season and, don't want to get injured, but want to run their best possible time? They want to do their best.
Well, you added in your hypothetical, what I think is one of the more important factors, and that is be part of a group to many. You become more accountable when you have to show up on a Saturday morning to do the run than if to say, I'm not feeling great. I'll do the run at 11 o'clock, and then 11 o'clock rolls around. I'll do it after lunch. So when you have a group, whether it's Team for Kids or your local running club, or another charity team, or just even a couple buddies, you have an obligation to them to be there that Saturday morning to get in the run. And then you start to feel, I don't know if I have it today, if I could finish, but you're with other people and you're not going to drop out. And then you finish it and you go, I'm glad I stuck it out. But that's the benefit of being part of a group. So I think that that's one of the more important aspects. I think another aspect, as I've mentioned and alluded to, is training for endurance events is not something that should be done overnight or a short period. It's a gradual process. And you will see results, but don't expect to be able to do it in a short period of time and excel. Realize it's a commitment. And I tell this to people once we start seeing everyone from all over the world come in for the marathon, that the hard work is over. The hardest part of a marathon is not the marathon itself. The hardest part is the commitment to training for a marathon. So I'm like you, Mark, when you come up here in a couple weeks to run, you've done the hardest part. And we want you to go out there and now enjoy the part. And one thing that a lot of us say up here is then it's kind of like your graduation party. It is one big party, and people will be out there cheering for you. And there are more people out for the New York City Marathon for the average runner than they are out on the streets for the elites when they pass by. They're out to cheer people like you on. So realize that should be the fun day. And that is the fun day to celebrate all your hard work that you've done up to that. So people have to realize that the hardest part is the training. It's not the race itself. Because everyone says, oh, you run 26.2. My God, that's thing. No, it should be, oh my God, you trained for a marathon. That's amazing.
That's a good point. Yeah, and same for the kids that are leading up to their 5K or whatever. It's not that you were able to run 3 miles. Anyone could probably walk run 3 miles, but the kid was trained for that and is then able to have that endurance and that cardiovascular health to run the whole time or, run most of the time. And that's the training is the beauty leading up to it. And Glenn, let me just quickly ask you about, leading up this week, this coming week during the marathon lead up. I know you guys do some runs and then there's the expo. What is that like for the New York Marathon?
So this is probably, not probably, this is definitely one of the busiest weeks for anyone affiliated or working for New York Roadrunners. There is just, think of it logistically, the planning that has to go into hosting a marathon that in a normal year has over 50,000 people. So this year, the main, and most years, the main event that they have are the Expo, which most are familiar with in any marathon. But in New York, like everything else, the size of it, the magnitude of it, it is just tremendous. So we get vendors and booths and people and other marathons coming who have tables from all over the world to talk about their races, all the goods, and all the major manufacturers are there. And that's absolutely a great experience for people to walk around. And but those who are doing the race, we always recommend you go to the expo early and stay off your feet the day before, because you can be there hours. We also have, unlike a lot of other races, an opening ceremony where there's fireworks. And there they have people from all the different nations that are represented in a race carry their flags, go down by the finish line. It's actually broadcast online. And it's ended, it ends with the fireworks. And there's tickets for that that people can get at the and sit in the grandstands.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I'll have to tune in to watch online. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then obviously you there's a lot of other events going on. There's dinners for different organizations that are affiliated with Roadrunners. This year I'm actually participating on a run for some of the people who raise significant amount of funds, and they're going to do a run with Meb, and
nice.
We'll be going out just one morning for a short shakeout run.
Cool.
So there's lists and lists of events that we could spend a couple of your podcasts on just discussing, but those are some of the highlights.
Yeah, that, you know, Glenn, you've been in the New York Marathon scene so long. One of the things that people may be curious about is, what is it like, you know, how the course is designed from place to place, starting with the obstacle of getting people over to Staten Island?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting and kind of funny that people say Fred Lebeau was an absolute genius in the way he organized this race going through five boroughs. But the one thing that is really not his fault is that it begins on an island that there is no public transportation. The New York City subway system does not go to Staten Island. So logistically, New York Roadrunners, working with the city, has to get 50,000 people, and that's just the runners. Now you have other people, you know, the staff, the people who work at the village. Got to get all those people out to Staten Island. So that's a logistical nightmare. And they literally have the buses coming in over the bridge, but those have to be unloaded and gone because we're going to be running back the other way.
And so now, how about taking off the start of the race? I know you go up a hill, you're on a bridge. What are some of the highlights throughout the race that you would tell someone this is characteristic New York Marathon?
Well, everyone's seen the photograph of literally tens of thousands of people taking over the whole top of the bridge. For those who don't know, the Verrazano Bridge is actually two levels with two inbound, you know, with inbound lanes and outbound lanes on the top, and then inbound and outbound lanes on the bottom. And during the New York City Marathon, we actually take three of those four sections for runners. And when you see the overhead shot, that is, you know, the iconic shot of the start of everyone going. And what I think is really important for anyone who's running to understand or to remember is that you've been training for months for this event. You all have gotten up very early to have to get to Staten Island because we have to get all those runners over. And then you'll be at the Athletes Village for a few hours. And finally, you're going to be at the starting line of something that you've been waiting for months. And then all of a sudden you hear a cannon go off. It's not even a gun in New York City. And they start playing New York, Frank Sinatra singing New York, New York. And then you look up above and there's usually three, four, five helicopters. You start to go over the bridge and you see the New York skyline to your left. I mean, it's amazing. But what it also does is it gets your adrenaline flowing. And the biggest mistake people can make...
I'm having trouble hearing you.
The biggest error that people can make is letting that adrenaline get the best of you and going up. It is an uphill for a mile, the first mile. Is going too fast, and then flying down the other side of the bridge for another mile. And by the 5K, you could have blown your race. So it's really important for people to remember to take it easy during the first mile.
One of the things that I was thinking about asking you, Glenn, as we close up here, is when you're out on the course, you cheer for people all the time. You mentioned people cheering in New York, and you are stationed strategically of where people need you the most to cheer, to remind them of things. What is it that you say that you find is the best encouragement for people when they're running the race, and where do they need the most help?
Well, just to mention, and a little bit of a plug also for Team for Kids, mm-hmm. is so one of the benefits, besides obviously the cause, and people have different causes that are dear to their heart. So that I understand. If you had a grandparent who had Alzheimer's, you might want to help raise money for that. If you had someone who had Parkinson's, you might want to, you know, join the team here. But a lot of people do come because they understand the need for the programs. But putting aside that innate attraction to a certain cause, when you run for Team for Kids in the New York City Marathon, you just get unparalleled perks. And so one of the perks you'll be getting, and the other Team for Kids, is we have a private ferry that will take you to Staten Island that will only be Team for Kids. And when you get to Staten Island and you're in the Athletes Village, we have a private tent. And then what made me think of all this is the other point is that coaches will take you, and I'm one of them, will take you up to the start line on the bridge. And some of us coaches, including myself, will run over the bridge with you.
Oh, wow.
I used to, many years ago, they allowed me, I ran the full course, and I kept getting, so I would go out in wave one and keep getting slower and slower and slower. And I would cross the finish line, even though I went out in wave one, 5-6 hours later, by keep picking up slower and slower runners behind me. And they stopped that. So now when I go over the bridge, I'll hop on the subway and go to a point. We have coaches stationed every mile from 14 to the finish line to help our runners. And now an answer to your question is, as a coach, and it doesn't matter whether you're a coach, look for the positive for that, for the person who you're going. If they're smiling, tell them that. Tell them you saw them smiling, and that's fantastic. And to keep that on their face. And there actually is studies that have shown if you're smiling, it is easier, and that there is a benefit to that. If they're struggling, try to find the positive to tell them. I mean, one of the most important things that I tell runners about training is train your mind as much as the body. And when that comes into play is when that little gremlin gets on your shoulder at whatever, say mile 20, and starts saying, "This sucks, stop." You got to learn how to talk back to that gremlin, how to silence that gremlin. And those are the things that I try to tell them is, yes, you're hearing that voice, but don't let that voice control what you do. And those are the little things that those who are struggling. So if someone's doing well, I reinforce that. Or if someone actually still looks good but says, "I'm struggling," I tell them how good that they actually are, that they are not breaking down. And if someone's breaking down or having the mental struggles, I try to bring them back to times in their training when they go, "Wow, the weather stinks. And I was running through that pouring storm," or, "I wanted to quit during that 3-hour run." And I said, you know, draw upon that experience to say, "I'm going to keep going." Or you could do something external. I mean, I remember one year when I was able to run people into the finish line that someone was struggling towards the very end. And he had just had a child. And so I don't know what made me think. I said, "You want to know? Finish this and don't walk, and do it for your newborn. Think that you're doing it for him." And a lot of people do. They dedicate miles. And he told me afterwards, and he didn't walk, was that he started drawing upon that. So it's important to try to sense what the person needs and try to provide that to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you really get to know that person and their life situation. Obviously, that relationship is so important. I'm grateful for all of your service, Glenn, and I know that everyone running on Team for Kids this year will benefit from that experience and that wisdom that you're bringing into it. And I wish you the very best leading up to it. And I know that when I get to meet you in person, at the next New York Marathon, it will be a connection that I will remember. So thank you so much for meeting me to talk.
Oh, thank you again for having me as part. But more important, thank you and thank you to all the runners who don't just run for themselves, who decide to run for a cause, be it Team for Kids or something else, because you're out there raising, millions and millions of dollars for good causes, and you're doing something other than just for yourself. And I respect you and I thank you.
No.
So thank you, Mark, for being part of our program and raising much needed money for these programs.
Well, thank you, Glenn, and all the best, and all the best to everyone. Happy running.
See you on the roads.
See you on the roads. Well, another episode of The Running Anthropologist and another marathon season in the fall running to an end. But there are many more to come, many inspiring things to come throughout this season, and I hope that we would share some of that with you and you would share some of it with us. Please reach out to us at Running Anthropologist and online or on any of the social media that you would like to, and send us your corner of running culture, what inspires you, what gets you moving. And thank you so much to Coach Glenn. Thanks for Team for Kids. I will be posting a link in the bio of both the website and Instagram if you would like to contribute to Team for Kids in any way. Thanks again. Wish you and yours happy running.